This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. What if Justin Fields said what Trevor Lawrence said? So Raj asked my producer in Los Angeles. I'm in New York. Raj is in Los Angeles. Brendan's in Connecticut. These are still the COVID days. I'll ask Lewis Riddick in a few minutes. Oh, Raj. You know, that's really 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. See, during the commercial break, it sounded to me like Raj said Lewis Riddick. So I told him, like, Raj, you know it's Riddick with an I. And he just wrote Riddick on my Zoom screen to try to get me to say Riddick, because he knows that I'll read anything that's written for me on my Zoom screen or in a prompter and not even realize, like, I said it, like Will Ferrell in Anchorman. Nice try,
Chronicles
Raj,
of Riddick. Chronicles of Lewis Riddick. That's what we should name this segment. Chronicles of Lewis Riddick.
The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. Dr. J, Julius Erving, said the Nets are buying a championship, compared them to the Brooklyn, compared Brooklyn to the Yankees and to the Lakers. He said it's reminiscent of how the Yankees used to do it all the time. Talking to Danny Green on Danny Green's podcast. They load up and call it buying a championship. The Lakers are known for doing it, too. They're just buying a championship, man. They're getting all these pieces. See, I think in the NBA, you can't really say buying a championship because everyone's subject to the same salary cap. So I would say the way Dr. J is using the term, he means collecting pieces that were not originally on your team through the draft, right? Or even through trades. There's something that feels, I think, more organic to people if teams are put together by a GM drafting and trading. That feels organic. What feels bought are free agent signings and then like a collection of buyout pieces because they want to be with the big free agent signings. But why? Why is one bought and the other organic? Why? Because it's okay for a GM to put a team together, but because it's not technically in the player's job description, if the player puts it together, it's not as like natural somehow. No, the Nets aren't buying a championship. I mean, by the way, if they were, good for them. They could figure out how to do that in a salary cap league. The Knicks have tried, weren't able to do it. In fact, you want to talk about buying a championship? Prokhorov, former owner, tried to buy the Nets a championship, but what he found out is, like, and this should be obvious to anyone. Obviously, Prokhorov's not an idiot if he's a billionaire, right? Like, but it's an idiotic thing to try to do. There's a salary cap. You're going to run up against the salary cap. So if you don't properly value the commodities, meaning the players, and you overpay for players, you're going to have less money to get other players. And if you pay a non-MVP caliber player as though he's an MVP player, a max contract, you're not going to be good enough. You can't do it in the NBA like that. The way to, quote-unquote, buy a championship in the NBA is to be a destination that players want to play. That's not just the sexiness of the market, L.A., Miami, whatever, warm weather, no tax. You know, if you go to Texas or a warm weather place like Miami or L.A. or a glamour destination like L.A. or New York, I mean, that helps. But players want to know, no. This is a healthy place to play. It's almost like taking credit away from the Lakers. Los Angeles Lakers. Dr. Jerry Buss buys the team in 1979. They're sitting on 6 championships. By the time Kobe's done, even before this last one, they got 10 championships. No, excuse me, 16. 10 extras. In about, you know, what was it? So 79. Took about 30 years for the Lakers to add 10 to the 6 championships they already had. Meaning they won a championship on average every 3 years. They were in it on average like half the time, and they half the time they were in it were more they won it. Now, you can't buy a championship that way. Mm-mm. In baseball, you can, although the Yankees had the most success, not when they tried to buy a championship. Like, 2009, they bought that championship. That was the only championship they won after 2000, even until this day. Been 2 decades, 1 championship. They bought it. But in the late 90s, early 2000s, like 96, 8, 9, 2000, very nearly in 2001, They won the championship almost every year, and they rarely, if ever, had the highest payroll. But in basketball especially, when you look, if it was just a matter of buying a championship, Steve Ballmer is a multi-billionaire, and he has the same market the Lakers do. But who won the championship last year? The Lakers. People got to stop hating and just give it up to the Lakers. Paul in California, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, what's up, Max? How you doing?
Go ahead, Paul.
All right, what's going on, man? Rocking with the Lakers, but I am going to say I feel like you can buy championships in the NBA. I feel like it's happened quite a few times, and my analogy, it might not be perfect, but you can just let me know. But it's like we're going to the strip club, or we're going to the club, and all the girls get in before 10 free, and they all get together and say, hey, this is how we're going to do this, and this is how we're going to set it up to give ourselves the best chance. We ain't going to talk to no dudes unless they buy us a bottle of champagne. Mm-hmm. And we come in, and we trying to talk to them, and they and they leading up to the bottle of champagne. So I feel like with LeBron is different than Kawhi.
Wait, you got to explain LeBron this analogy to me. Hold on. So
okay, cool.
So the superstars like, are the girls in this case, and they get together and say, we're all going to get together. But when you say you have to buy us the champagne, who's the customer and who's buying the champagne?
The champagne is the champagne is the owner. Because now at this point,
Paul, you asked me to tell you if it's a good analogy. It's an interesting start to an analogy, but it falls apart logically. If the girls in this case at the club are the superstars and they get together, meaning like if you want to see the girls, you got to go into this club, right? So then the analogy would be that the customers are actually the role players who would otherwise be too expensive for that team to afford. But because they want to play with the superstars, they're willing to do it like at an enormous discount. And in that way, you're not exactly buying a championship, but you are purchasing, in a way, commodities at lower prices than you would otherwise be able to because of their desire to be a part of what you have. That's still not buying a championship, Paul. But it's like a terrible analogy, but the interesting start to an analogy. Now go clean that up and come with a better analogy next time. I hope everyone was taking notes on what I said. Matthew in Arizona, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max Kellerman, I'm a huge fan. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, brother.
So, I wanted to compare last year's Clippers with this year's Brooklyn Nets. Now, I know there's going to be differences, and I'm excited to hear your take. But ever since Kawhi went to the Clippers last year, it was a done deal. Everyone said, this is the team, it's done. Now we have the same scenario happening this year with the Nets, and no doubt there's talent that we have never seen before. But they don't quite have that continuity of playing together, and I'm just curious if you see any comparisons to this year's Nets with last year's Clippers.
I see obvious comparisons. You just made them. I don't really see it on a deeper level. Let me tell you why. The continuity is a real thing. There's a comparison, right? Because the Clippers couldn't get continuity last year, neither can the Nets now. Here's the difference. When the Clippers played together last year, they were very good, but they weren't the best team in basketball. We were assuming, I was at least, that they were built more like a playoff team than a lot of other teams. And so come playoff time, Kawhi would show up and, you know, a different level Kawhi, and being more built for the playoffs, they'd be good. Didn't happen. The difference with that Clippers team and this Nets team, really, if you want to boil it down, make it simple. The Clippers had two of those guys. The Nets have three. But furthermore, Paul George is not as good as James Harden, or probably not also in playoff time, Kyrie Irving. So the talent, not only do the Nets have more of those guys, but their talent is pitched even higher. Now, what does that mean? What we've seen with our own eyes so far from the Nets is without even KD, no one can cope with even Harden and Kyrie. So I never got the feeling from the Clippers last year, we're going to see the best team ever. I'm telling you this right now. If the Nets can stay healthy, mark my words, if they can stay healthy, they will be the greatest offense in the history of American team sports, not just basketball. And I never felt that way about the Clippers last year. Louis Riddick, ESPN NFL analyst, now on the Goodyear Hotline. The Chronicles of Riddick. That's what Raj wants to call this. Okay, not bad. Louis, are you there?
Yeah, I sure am, man.
Well, thank you for joining me today, as always. So we're talking about what Trevor Lawrence said. And look, you know, not everyone has to be Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, killer. They'll do anything, gnaw off their own arm to win. KD,
sure.
Early in his career, had similar comments to Trevor Lawrence. He became a champion. But so what is your take on what Trevor Lawrence said? He's talking about, like, his father said winning a championship is not the most important, like, it's not live or do or die for him. And Trevor Lawrence said, I'm not going to pretend to be someone I'm not, you know, I like the process of playing, but I'm not built the way, you know, that way. What do you think about all that?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's not an apples to apples comparison, I believe, with basketball or any other sport. And it's not even really an apple up. Apples comparison with other positions in football. I think quarterback is very, very unique. And that's not to say that Trevor can't be successful doing what he's always done, having that mindset as far as, you know, it's not the most important thing in the world to me to win a championship. And there were people, I believe it may have been his wife, who were quoted as saying that, you know, they wouldn't be shocked at all if Trevor just kind of decided to walk away from the game at some point and really not have any regrets and not look back and surprise people in that regard. And look, that opened my eyes and raised my eyebrows somewhat, because look, the people who have succeeded at this position. At the very highest levels, which is what is going to be expected, Max, of him, to succeed at the highest level, not just be an okay quarterback, not just win some
Hall
games,
of Famer.
Not just be,
yeah.
I mean, they need him to be great. He's right. Going to be the first pick of the draft. A coach came out of retirement who has admitted that the grind of trying to be perfect was something that ate at him and helped his and kind of caused his health to deteriorate. That's what the expectations on Trevor are, massive. And every great quarterback that I've ever talked to, and see, Steve Young is one of the people who I quote over and over and over again about the fact that, like, what takes you from good to great is really submerging yourself in the details of the game, which really does require a unique level of commitment to the game, an almost maniacal commitment to the game. That is what the Breezes, the Mannings, the Bradys, the Aaron Rodgers of the world have, that want to know the details so much so to the point where I have answers before you can even give me the test. It doesn't matter what version of the test you give me, I have the answer. So, I don't know, maybe Trevor still gets himself to that point. But I just know that the work ethic that is required to be great in college and to be great in the ACC against Wake Forest and Boston College is not the same as the kind of commitment it's going to take to be great against the Indianapolis Colts defense.
No, you know, it's
or against, you know, the New England Patriots defense or any other defense that he's going to go up against. It's going to take a different level.
Yeah,
I'm interested to see how it all plays out and for how long.
I have some more questions for you, Louis Riddick, here on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. I'll just say that I was excited by Johnny Manziel because I wanted to see, can a quarterback succeed who reminds me in certain ways of, like, Joe Namath, right? Does everyone have to do it the same way, or is it possible to do it another way? At the quarterback position, it does seem that Tom Brady is the model. You want to be as much like that as possible. But, Louis, I want to ask you another question, not just as a former player and a former successful executive and now an analyst on ESPN of the NFL, but as a black man. Okay, I want to ask you this question as the fully formed human being, not just in any one role. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that year in and year out, especially in recent years, sometimes people are right about it. You know, we saw Daniel Jones rise in the draft and Dwayne Haskins fall in the draft. Sometimes people are wrong about it. We saw Mitch Trubisky rise and Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes didn't fall, but Deshaun Watson fell and they were chosen after him. But what is consistent, it seems to me, is black quarterbacks draft stock falling in the lead up to the draft vis-a-vis their white counterparts. I bring this up because Justin Fields was, along with Trevor Lawrence, the most valued high school prospect, and he had a very successful college career. And we are hearing increasingly that he won't be the first pick like Trevor Lawrence. He won't be the second pick like Zach Wilson. And by the way, based on what I've seen, I get it with Zach Wilson. I get it. Yeah. But then Mac Jones, the third pick, and and now maybe Justin Fields, the fifth pick. So I ask you, with that in mind, Trevor Lawrence said this. If Justin Fields was the presumptive number one pick overall and he said this, what do you think would happen?
Yeah, I think we know what would happen. We know the kind of scrutiny that he would be under right now. And we can act like, and by we, I'm just going to say in general, certain people can act like, oh, that has no, that plays no part of it, the fact whether he's black or white. We criticize him, we scrutinize him, we analyze everyone fairly and equally. We know that's not true. We just know, we know that there are certain biases towards black quarterbacks in particular that we have been trying to do away with and minimize over the course of time as much as possible. And every time we feel as though we have gotten somewhere in terms of making significant progress with it, something comes up to where there are these anonymous types of rumors about certain individuals. And then, and they're always attributed to, and rather they always usually circulate around intelligence and or commitment and work ethic. And that is, that's just a fact. Whether or not it's something that is that ever bears out to be true, which sometimes, again, as you've said, sometimes it's right, just like it can be with a white quarterback. Sometimes it's wrong, just like it can be with a white quarterback.
But the positive correlation is always that the black quarterback's draft stock falls versus the white quarterback.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And that is something that is, look, it's one of the things I brought up initially, you know, first thing this morning, which was if Justin Fields at some point in time in this draft, you know, in this process had said something, or someone close to him had said something similar to what Trevor Lawrence said, what would we be doing right now? It'd be the number one topic on every single show.
Someone would get a steal in the fourth round, Lewis, is what would happen. Let's
that's
be
right.
honest. You know?
Exactly.
But I want to ask you, because this is what it seems to me. So there was always a barrier against black quarterbacks in the NFL, right? Like Warren Moon had to go to the CFA, he had to go to Canada. They wanted to make him a wideout. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback. So there's always this, and back then it was leadership qualities. Can a black man lead? Right. Okay. Well, well, obviously, yes. The answer is yes. And it's work ethic. Or, yes, it depends on the individual, like anyone else. Sometimes just like water. Yeah. But now it's something more subtle and in a way insidious. And I think this affects head coaches too, because offense is the craze now. And what and without saying, without directly talking about intelligence, it's this idea that this requires sophistication, right? There's a nuance and a sophistication, which is why you don't see a lot of black offensive coordinators. And those are the guys getting the head coaching jobs for the most part, right? And that's what I see. Those are the code, the kind of coded language I hear around Justin Fields. Now, maybe it's true. I don't know, Lewis. You tell me.
Right.
But it seems to me like he's pretty damn good in college.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what. Let's just move off of Justin Fields for a moment. Let's talk about Trey Lance. One of the first things people will tell you about Trey Lance is how just extraordinarily football intelligent he is.
Quick reads,
and
high
IQ. How much credit he was given for a lot of the pre-snap, you know, decision making up there at North Dakota State that was maybe even above and beyond the level of responsibility that was given to Carson Wentz. But how much do you hear about it?
Right.
You don't hear about it very much, do you? All you hear about with him is, well, he's a project. He didn't play very much this year, and his resume is too limited. It's always things that almost kind of like diminish what is really one of his greatest strengths.
That's right. People
and
hear black person
that?
And immediately they say project. What's up about that? You know, like
that's
Trey
right. I'll even relate this personally to myself. Okay,
right.
Max, when we're talking about something even more insidious, meaning the biases that people, the assumptions that people automatically make about this level of, as you put it, sophistication and or intelligence of black individuals. Nothing chaps my you know what more than when I hear someone describe myself as being, so articulate and well-spoken.
Yeah, you're well-spoken, yeah.
as if to say, well, what am I supposed to, what does that mean? Almost as if it's an exception instead of the rule.
Right.
You know exactly what that means. And we're talking about the same thing right here. The presumption that you're not going to be very smart and or well-spoken and articulate. And when you are, oh, my God, I need to find some reasons as to why that's the case, because that's not how it's supposed to be.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. These things, Lewis, we need to continue this conversation, but I'm being told that we're out of time. It's as soon as a black man starts talking about sophistication and intelligence, right away the white man has to cut him off. You see that, Lewis? It's not right. Raj, why don't you stop working for the man for 5 seconds? Lewis Riddick on the Goodyear Hotline. Lewis, come back and finish this conversation. What do you say?
Absolutely, my man. Anytime, you let me know.
Appreciate it. The great Lewis Riddick, ladies and gentlemen, on the Goodyear Hotline. Man, I was hoping the Giants would hire him as GM. Helping you discover the road ahead, Goodyear more driven. You see, I like a GM with sophistication and nuance. I wanted Lewis Riddick. Coming up, do the Nuggets have any chance to beat the Lakers without Jamal Murray? The football offseason's always wild with all the trades, free agent signings, and new coaching hires. Teams have to be excited for the coming season. If you want to hire people that really excite you, you got to team up with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's matching technology finds people with the right experience for your job and then actively invites them to apply. No wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. To try ZipRecruiter for free, just go to this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/max, M-A-X. 4 out of 5 on the first day. I use ZipRecruiter. I found Raj, but I was the 5th guy. The other four, they got the right guy. And Raj, I will never say you are well-spoken. You're barely mediocre spoken at best. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/max. Ask Max next.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Got a question? Got a comment? Have an opinion? 888-SAY-ESPN. Just want to hear your voice on the radio. 888-729-3776. Listen, if I take your call, I'm not trying to hear, what's up? No. You love me, you hate me. You can say that. I don't care. Just give me an opinion. Or if you have a question, get right to it. Raj, I'm going to have to start ruthlessly cutting people off if they start wasting time.
We were talking about it during the break, B and I. We were talking about it. We got to say, too many people asking, what are you doing?
That's right. Do the Nuggets have any shot versus the Lakers without Jamal Murray? I really feel bad for the Nuggets. I'm a Lakers fan, but I feel bad for the Nuggets. This Nuggets team was a legit championship threat this year once they got Aaron Gordon. First of all, they were already kind of live, right? Because Jamal Murray, come playoff time, becomes an MVP caliber player. And Jokic is probably the MVP this year. It's either going to be him or Damian Lillard. So Michael Porter Jr. is ascending as an offensive threat. But Aaron Gordon, the addition of Gordon, the two-man game that he and Jokic run, by the way Gordon cuts to the basket, his athletic ability is, and by the way, his passing, because that Jokic stuff is infectious, you know? They're not going to do anything without Jamal Murray. They ain't winning no championship. Forget it. With Jamal Murray this year, they had a legit chance to win a title. In fact, maybe they're right. I'd say this. The Suns, Clippers, and Jazz are none of those teams are more dangerous than the Nuggets with Murray. Without Murray, it's the Suns, Clippers, and Jazz. That's what the Lakers are down to in terms of legit threats. Christian in Texas, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance.
Max. Max.
And now Christian in Texas. You're on the Max Kellerman Show. What's up, Christian?
Hey, man. Hey, when they were talking about teams that didn't buy their championships, I noticed you mentioned the Mavericks. And I'm just curious as why the first team in your head wasn't the Spurs. I feel like they built their dynasty through the draft.
Oh, no, yes. What I wasn't referring to not just simply not buying a championship. I mean, the Spurs did such a great job drafting that they had a legitimate, like one of the greatest players who ever lived in Tim Duncan. But then around him, throughout their primes, they had Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili, two Hall of Famers. So even though Parker and Ginobili weren't MVP level players, they were legitimately great players who played, you know, contemporaneously with one of the best players who ever lived. So I don't think of teams like that, even though that was organic through the draft and everything and international. So I look at the Mavs and I think they had one great player in Dirk Nowitzki, and no other Hall of Famers in their prime. That's why the Mavs jumped to mind instead of the Spurs, like the Pistons in 04. Any Hall of Famers at all? Just a bunch of good players playing together. Frank in New Jersey, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max. Do you remember back when Kareem used to take days off to manage his load?
No.
No, exactly. Or did Mickey Mantle ever take a couple of days off because he wrapped himself up?
He should have.
He should.
Wait a minute.
His ankles.
Mickey Mantle should have taken days off. Had he done that, maybe he had a longer career or been more effective. Look, here's the thing. Nolan Ryan, Tom Brady, Cal Ripken, the Iron Men, I don't care how well you take care of yourself. If your connective tissue isn't different, you ain't playing 25 years without injury, basically. Ain't going to happen for most people. So load management is simply a way to try to keep the team's investment, and the fans are also very invested, healthy. So, and by the way, players today, well, it's not as physical a game, blah, 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 are asked to do so much more than players once upon a time when roles were more defined and when no one played defense. Pat Riley used to talk about this. He'd say in the 80s, we used to say, who are we going to defend? Even by the late 90s, like, you got to defend everybody. And nowadays, you got to switch and be able to guard multiple positions. Here's the interesting thing. This is sort of like, and by the way, I'm not claiming that load management can't get out of control. You ever hear, like, talk about any art form or, like, take hip-hop. I'm a rap fan, right? You say, well, back in the day, or boxing, back in the day, you had more great fighters. When I was a little kid, I bought into this nonsense. I'd be like, really? I thought Marvin Hagler and Alexis Arguello and Larry Holmes were pretty good. They're like, yeah, but we had Sugar Ray Robinson and Joe Louis and Jack Dempsey and Jake LaMotta and Willie Pep and Sandy South. They started naming every fighter from the history of boxing, and they wanted me to compare it to this one year, right? It's not apples to apples, or at least it's a whole bunch of apples to only a few. We do this with music, too. Back in the old days, you know, whatever music you listen to was much better. Really? If you're a hip-hop fan. Who you got today? You name a couple artists. Back in the day, we had KRS and Rakim and Wu-Tang and this and that, and we just keep going on and on because we're not comparing. Not only are we not comparing one year to one year, but rather the whole history. But we're only remembering the highlights, the also-rans, the mediocrity. We don't remember that. We remember the stuff that stuck with us, the really great stuff. Classical music is so much better than popular music today. Look, Mozart, Bach, right, because you're not talking about the bad classical composers. You're talking about the ones good enough to last hundreds of years.
Jesus.
So when you say, oh, did Kareem ever load manage? Yes, you can cherry pick players who had extremely long careers and also played most of their games and say, look at those guys. But those were exceptions, not rules. Is Poirier ready to end his spat with Conor McGregor? The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Last take next.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Got a question? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Last Take is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know I'm First Take. I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
Dustin Poirier said it was a mistake to publicize his charity's dispute with Conor McGregor. The UFC lightweight contender had criticized McGregor for not following through on a pledge to donate $500,000 to Poirier's charity foundation. The conflict escalated to the point that McGregor suggested he would seek another opponent instead of facing Poirier on July 10th. But Wednesday morning, UFC announced that McGregor-Poirier, who are 1-1 against each other, would finish their trilogy at UFC 265. Later Wednesday, Poirier tweeted that he should not have taken the charity squabble public and that he had, quote, jumped the gun. Let me tell you my read of this. I think that it's sometimes difficult for these fighters to know the line, if there is one, and can you cross it in publicizing a fight? McGregor is very rich because, or he's made a lot of money at least. I don't know how much he has left, but he's made a lot of money because he knows how to carry a promotion. And part of carrying a promotion, like the UFC, is like boxing meets the WWE. It has the realness of boxing combined with the kind of showmanship of the WWE. And these guys know that the more outrageous they are, and the more it's reality TV, right, in terms of the promotion, like, boy, these guys really don't like each other, there's no line they won't cross, the more interested fans will get. And maybe Poirier's thinking, like, all right, fine, anything goes, let's go do this. Then McGregor's like, oh, you know what, you want to go there? I'm not going to fight you. And Poirier's like, okay, hold on a second, I'm making a lot of money with this dude. And not only that, it's a rubber match. Bro, this is a rubber match. Each one won. This is a must-win fight for Conor McGregor. He didn't get to be the star only because he knows how to talk the talk. It's because he beat a lot of good fighters. He hadn't beaten a good fighter in that fighter's prime in a long time. A long time. Not enough to go out tough. He's got to win. UFC, boy, is rough. There are very, very few gimmies in that league, in that promotional outfit. Elliot, New York, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
What's going on, Max?
Go ahead, Elliot.
I was talking about with my friends the other day about the playing games for the NBA playoffs.
Yep.
I like the concept of it. But I still think they should have went 7-10, 8-9 instead of 7-8, 8-9.
I agree. I think if the higher seed should get, but you know, like, what if the Lakers can't tread water and wind up in the 10 seed, and then LeBron and AD get back, and you're the Mavericks? Like, I agree with you in principle, though. The higher seed should get the easier draw. That's right. I think that's right. Daniel in Virginia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max. I was wondering how come Kyle Trask, it seems like he's not really been in the conversation.
Well, I think that's because you have four quarterbacks who look like they have different kind of athletic talent. Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance. And then you have one quarterback who played for the most storied program in college football at a very high level in Mac Jones. You also, like, as much as we say, hey, black quarterbacks are falling versus white quarterbacks and Mac Jones is rising, but a lot of evaluators think extremely highly of Mac Jones, that he does read defenses and he makes, like the number one quality for a quarterback, provided you have the requisite arm strength, other than leadership, which is kind of this nebulous thing, is how fast do you make decisions and what kind of quality are those decisions? How fast do you make the best decisions? And apparently Mac Jones is very good at that. I think because of that, those five, Mac Jones kind of got his way into the category with the other four who are athletically different, and Kyle Trask is considered in the next group. Kayvon in Texas. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, Kayvon.
Kayvon, go ahead.
Max, how you doing, man? Just wanted to ask real quick, if the Dallas Mavericks somehow overtake the Blazers and hold the 60, would you see them as an underdog in the playoffs?
Underdog six versus, so who are you saying they wind up playing? The Suns or the – no, the Suns are – who would be the Clippers? Yeah, I think they're underdogs. Here's the problem with Dallas as I see it now. Porzingis' health is obviously number one. Provided Porzingis is healthy, I think Dallas is one good wing away. COVID has hit them hard, and when Porzingis is healthy, they're very tough. But I look at Porzingis and Hardaway, obviously Luka – I like Kleba, Dorian Finney-Smith has been okay this year. They're one wing who can really play away from joining that group of the elite teams in the conference, I think, which are the Lakers, the Suns, the Nuggets, if Jamal Murray were healthy, but he's not, the Jazz and the Clippers. They were my sleeper pick this year, but I'm backing off them a little bit the way I've seen them play recently. Lakers-Celtics tonight, L.A. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.